This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Columbus, Ohio. In Washington, the court clears the cold cash case for trial. In New York, a Democratic fundraiser heads to jail. Judy Chu wins in California, and Republicans declare the mistakes of the past history. It's Wednesday, and time to move on with the political junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
On Wednesdays, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us. And as usual, there's a lot to talk about. Democrats deal the president a problem on Guantanamo. Florida's Republican attorney general wants to move up to the governor's job. A new challenger for Chris Dodd in Connecticut. Biden blabs on Cheney's bunker. Or not. In a bit, we'll focus on politics here in Ohio with Fred Anderle of WOSU. Republicans hope for a revival in the Buckeye State. And we'll talk with Republican strategist Richard Viguerie about the purpose of what's likely to be a losing battle over the president's Supreme Court nominee. But as always, we'll begin with a trivia question. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us from Studio 3A in Washington. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil. I should tell you that many of the Talk of the Nation staff misses you. Not everybody, but a lot of people do miss you. It's very lonely here in Studio 3A. But the fact that you are in Columbus, and given the likelihood that they will be, or they expect it to be, a Supreme Court nominee as soon as next week, here's my trivia question. Who is the last elected official from Ohio who was later appointed to the Supreme Court?
The last elected official from the state of Ohio to be appointed to the United States Supreme Court. If you think you know the answer, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Of course, the winner gets a fabulous no prize, a political junkie T-shirt. And Ken, while we wait answers to come in, let's talk about the president's twofer this week. He found a new ambassador to Beijing and may have eliminated a potential opponent for 2012.
Well, I'm not sure he was really thinking 2012 when he picked John Huntsman, the governor of Utah, to be the next ambassador to China. But what he did do is he took a leading Republican moderate, somebody who he supports same-sex, well, he supports civil unions. He opposes same-sex marriages, but he's considered a moderate in the Republican Party. Conservatives in Utah never liked him. They felt he was just too moderate. But by picking him ambassador to China, it looks like Huntsman is out of the 2012 Republican presidential sweepstakes. And that's either good news for people like Mitt Romney, who, of course, like Huntsman, is a Mormon, and like Huntsman, has a lot of support from the West. But again, the moderate wing of the Republican Party loses a champion.
And this is what the governor had to say as he appeared in the White House with the president upon learning about his nomination.
Since I came to this House 30 years ago, I've always felt that the House is at its best when it is united. In order that unity can be maintained, I have decided that I will relinquish the office of Speaker.
And, of course, that's the unusual Scottish accent from the state of Utah. That's not, in fact, Governor Huntsman, but the British Speaker of the House, Michael Martin, who announced his resignation yesterday. And we'll get back to Governor Huntsman in a bit, Ken Rudin. But the first Speaker of the House of Parliament to step down, to be forced out of office, really, in over 300 years.
Huntsman was, I didn't realize that John Huntsman did have that accent, and that was very interesting.
Yes, very interesting.
But it did remind a lot of people of the House banking scandal when back in the 1990s, a bunch of members of the House routinely had overdrafts on their bank, and of course, it's business as usual in Washington, but the American people were outraged, and that's exactly what's happening in Great Britain. Conservatives, liberals, and members of the Labour Party, all three major parties in Britain, had, you know, used official funds to, like, you know, clean out their bathroom and, you know, build a moat, clean out their moat in their backyard, whatever it was. But the British people were outraged by this. So it's very interesting how it touched the nerve. And again, as you say, the first Speaker of the House of Commons to resign in over 300 years.
And relatively modest amounts of money, not dissimilar from the House banking scandal. But nevertheless, perhaps they would have been wiser not to spend some of it on bags of horse manure.
Yes, although we've seen a lot of that being used in American politics. So, you know.
We have actual votes cast in an election yesterday in the state of California. They did not actually elect a new member of the House of Representatives. But the verb everybody has to learn again this week is tantamount.
Well, it's even more than that. Of course, this is the race in California's 32nd district. It's the neighborhoods in East Los Angeles and further east and south, an overwhelmingly Latino district that's been held by Hispanic candidates since 1982 in Congress, first Matthew Martinez and then Hilda Solis. When Solis left to become Secretary of Labor, that necessitated the special election. Judy Chu, however, was the leading Democrat yesterday. All the candidates run on the same ballot. The leading Democrat, the leading Republican, and the leading Libertarian will go to a July runoff. But because Judy Chu defeated Gil Cedillo, who is Latino, Judy Chu got the most votes of any Democrat. She will be the so-called Democratic nominee in July and the likely next Congress member from that district, which is very interesting because, as I say, it's been overwhelmingly Latino.
We're going to try to get some. There is going to. When is that next? The final part of this?
July 14th. Yes.
Okay. So at that point, I think we can safely say Judy Chu will be elected a member of Congress, given the demographics in that district. Let's see if we can get some people on the line who think they know the answer to our trivia question this week, and that is the last member of the Supreme Court of the United States to come from Ohio and be an elected official. And let's see if we can go first to Mark. And Mark's on the line from Baltimore.
I was going to guess former President Taft.
Well, President Taft actually never was elected to any office in Ohio, even though he came from Ohio. He was the Governor General of the Philippines, as you well remember, and then he was Secretary of War, and then he became President. But, of course, he was later Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justice, but he never ran for office in Ohio.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks.
Nice try, Mark. Thanks very much. And let's see if we can go next to George, and George is with us from Tallahassee. George, are you there? All right, George has left us, and let's go instead to Devin. And Devin is calling us from right here in Columbus, Ohio.
Yes, I am.
Go ahead, please.
Is it Burton?
Well, Harold Burton is a good guess. Harold Burton was the mayor of Cleveland in the 30s, a senator in the 1940s, but there was somebody more recent than Harold Burton.
Oh, okay.
Nice answer, though, Devin.
Elected official.
Harold Burton is the kind of person you'd want, but we have somebody even more recent than Harold Burton.
Okay.
Thanks very much for the call, Devin.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, and let's see if we can go next to Sonia, and Sonia's calling us from Colorado.
Yes, hi. How about Potter Stewart?
Potter Stewart is the answer.
Yoo-hoo!
Ding, 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 ding. Congratulations, Sonia.
Great, and I want to say hey to David, too.
Okay, David. Nice to talk to David. David Gura. You know David Gura?
I do. He's one of your producers, I think, right?
Well, not this week. He's off on training or some goof-off.
Well,
but
actually,
yes, he is one of our producers.
David Gura is also on President Obama's shortlist for the Supreme Court, ironically, which is interesting. But Potter Stewart was a member of the Cincinnati City Council. He took that familiar path from city council to the Supreme Court when Eisenhower picked him in 58.
And there's been a lot of questions, Sonia, about trivia questions, but clearly you know a good trivia question when you see it. So we're going to put you on hold, and you will be the recipient of the Talk of the Nation Political Junkie No Prize.
Thanks so much. And, Ken, I love this show, so keep it up.
Well, Neil has a lot to do with it.
Every once in a while.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. And we are now going on to the race for governor in the state of Virginia, which is coming up sooner than people expect. And former Democratic Committee Chairman Terry McAuliffe has taken out ads along with Democrat Brian Moran of Virginia, this for the Democratic nomination. And some interesting politics here. Let's listen to Democrat Brian Moran's ad that's begun running this week.
The press on Terry McAuliffe's insider deals. McAuliffe has made a fortune investing, sometimes in companies that went bust, laid off thousands, and drained employee savings. Barack Obama ran against exactly the kind of big money politics that McAuliffe represents. Brian Moran worked with Mark Warner and Tim Kaine, fighting for Virginia's families and seniors. The choice? McAuliffe working insider deals for himself, or Brian Moran's hard work for us?
Brian Moran there, and here's McAuliffe firing back with an ad against Terry Moran.
The attacks on Terry McAuliffe are just plain wrong.
When the small bank that I worked at was in trouble, Terry stepped up.
I was with Terry when jobs were on the line, and he was not going to give up.
He kept the promises that he made. He took care of us.
False attacks won't create jobs. My plan invests in education, renewable energy, and high-speed rail to get our economy moving. As governor, I'll make it my job to protect your job.
And Ken, a lot of people thought Terry McAuliffe was the clear front runner in this campaign, certainly better funded than his opponent. Was it the right tack to fight back against his opponent?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, you have Bob McDonnell, who's the Republican former attorney general, waiting in the wings. And the Democratic Party, after Barack Obama carried the state for the first time of any Democratic president since Lyndon Johnson, you think the Democrats would be on a roll, but they are eating each other alive in this primary, which takes place on June 9th. I guess it's two weeks or 3 weeks from now. And basically, Terry McAuliffe has been the front runner. He was a former Democratic National Committee chairman. And what's interesting also is that Brian Moran is trying to tell black voters that basically Terry McAuliffe did everything he could to prevent Barack Obama from becoming president. And, of course, what that means is that Terry McAuliffe backed Hillary Clinton well beyond the likelihood that she was going to win the nomination. But there are some feelings that are still raw in the state of Virginia. And it just seems kind of interesting to me that they're still fighting the Obama-Clinton primary race in this Virginia Democratic primary.
And we'll see how that works out. Of course, McAuliffe was a Democratic Party chairman under President Clinton, so there's a lot of history there. And one other thing, accusations this week that Vice President Joe Biden might have blabbed the location of Vice President Dick Cheney's undisclosed location.
Well, we're not sure of exactly what he did, but Joe Biden, I guess, gave a speech several months ago at a dinner, and he just talked about, I think, what his room looked like in this secret location. And a blog came out basically writing about what the speech was about, and suddenly Fox News seemed to think that Joe Biden was revealing national security secrets. I think it's much ado about nothing, but it did get a few headlines over a few days.
Yeah, he said the bunker was underneath the U.S. Naval Observatory, which is, of course, where the vice president's house is in Washington, D.C. It turns out everybody suspects it was, in fact, in a Cold War bunker up somewhere in Pennsylvania. Nevertheless, stay with us. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Fred Anderle of WOSU, our member station here in Columbus, Ohio, about Republican politics and Democratic politics in this critical state. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Columbus, Ohio. Ken Rudin, our political junkie, is with us from Studio 3A in Washington, D.C. Of course, he's NPR's political editor. And we have spent our share of time in this state. Ohio politics are some of the most closely watched in the nation, every 4 years, for example. But now is the time that true political junkies really watch. And joining us today here in the studios of WOSU in Columbus is the host of Open Line here at WOSU, Fred Anderle. Nice to have you on the program.
Neil, good to be here. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Fred.
And if you live in the state of Ohio, we'd like to hear from you today. How do politics in Ohio shape up for the next election? What are the chances for a Republican revival after an historic Democratic takeover of this state in the last few years? 800-989-8255 is the phone number. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also get into the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And Fred, you've been watching politics here in the state of Ohio pretty closely for the last 20 years and more. And were you surprised by the extent of the Democratic takeover in the last couple of years?
Oh, not a bit. By the way, I want to say the first thing in terms of a Republican revival is that the Ohio Republican Party Chairman Kevin DeWine, he's at the Republican Party Chairman's Conference this week in Washington. He's not going to vote for the proposal to label the Democratic Party as the Democrat Socialist Party. He says that sort of noise is unproductive. That's the first step in the Republican resurgence here in Ohio.
Okay. But there are a couple of very attractive candidates shaping up for the next set of races here in the state. It's hoped that former Congressman John Kasich will be running for governor, and former Congressman Rob Portman will be running for the United States Senate.
They will be running for those in 2010. The difficulty is for the Republicans now in the state that there's almost a Democratic sweep. There's only one Republican office holder on the executive level statewide. That's the state auditor, Mary Taylor. And, you know, our governor, Ted Strickland, the Democratic governor, has a 57% approval rating, even in the middle of this crisis, even though he ran on the proposition that he would turn around Ohio. That was his slogan. But he's not been able to turn it around. The economy is so bad. We've lost 269,000 jobs in the last 15 months, if you can imagine that.
Good Lord. You talked about those apparently bleak Republican prospects. But again, just a couple of years ago, you would have said the Democratic prospects were equally bleak.
Absolutely. You know, for a long time, Democrats held the whole state from the mid-1980s through the mid-1990s, and suddenly there was a total turnaround. The Democrats lost both houses in the Ohio legislature. They lost the Supreme Court. They lost everything they had. They had no structure. They had no organization. They couldn't even field a decent candidate for governor. The Republicans took over, and in 2007, the Democrats swept again. Possibly, I would say mostly because of the economy. 9.7 unemployment rate right now. So far, Ohio voters are not holding Governor Strickland at 57% approval rating responsible for that economy so far.
We think of Ohio as a closely contested state, as the, in fact, the cockpit of American presidential politics. Nevertheless, how do you account for these, you know, wild swings, all Democrats one year and all Republicans the next?
Well, Ohioans like moderates. Whatever Republicans have been successful, it's because they've run a moderate candidate. Governor Strickland, Democrat, he's moderate. He's liberal on social issues, but he's conservative on economic issues, and he is NRA endorsed. He's a gun rights advocate. He's in favor, I should say, of the death penalty. Ohioan's sort of like a good old boy in the governor's chair, somebody who can press the flesh and somebody who's not going to be scary in either direction. So Democrats took advantage of the economy. They took advantage of a Democratic resurgence nationwide, and now they're in power. The question is for how long. It could change in a heartbeat.
And they also took advantage of some Republican scandals.
And some Republican scandals as well, yeah.
Nevertheless, it is almost endemic that the party that enjoys that much power, well, after a little while, the temptations mount and those scandals mount too.
Well, you know, if you look at the approval ratings right now, President Obama, 62% approval rating here in Ohio. Candidates, you know, George Voinovich, a Republican senator, is retiring. There are two Democratic candidates who are going to battle it out in the primary, the Lieutenant Governor Lee Fisher, the Secretary of State Jennifer Bruner. They're both leading Rob Portman, the former congressman, the former director of Bush's Office of Management and Budget. They're both leading them in matchup polls now by 8 to 11 points. But, you know, by the time November of 2010 rolls around, that could change entirely. If once voters in Ohio decide that it is the governor's fault that we have an exodus of jobs from Ohio and that they're not going to be replaced, the Republicans could be back up again.
Now, let's see if we can get some listeners in on the conversation. Again, along with Ken Rudin in Washington, our guest here in Ohio is Fred Anderle of member station WOSU, the host of Open Line here on the station. And let's see if we can go to Brad. And Brad's calling us from Kalamazoo in nearby Michigan.
That's right. Yeah, I'm a student at Cedarville University, which is down in Ohio near Dayton.
Mm-hmm.
Notice that while the rural areas have stayed more conservative, it seems that the more populated areas, Columbus and Cincinnati are the ones I'm close to, have become more to the left as over the last 2 years. I think that's partially due to just the swing in U.S. politics, but I feel like the rural areas have stayed very very far to the right, while the more leftist areas in the larger cities have become more to the left. Do you figure out or do you agree that that's what's happening?
Fred?
Yeah, that's indeed true. I mean, Columbus is not a red state or a blue state. It's kind of a purple state, and the urban areas tend to be Democratic, especially in Columbus and Franklin County. It's very hard for a Republican to get elected at all. The voters are younger. They're more liberal. But go a little ways out into the suburbs and a little ways out into rural areas, and you've got solid red territory. That's absolutely right. Of course, Cincinnati environs remain pretty solidly Republican. So it's a mixed state. That's why it's a bellwether state. That's why it can swing either way.
And we always heard during the elections that you had a bit of Appalachia down in the southeastern corner of
Surely.
Ohio, a bit of the Midwest, a bit of the industrial Northeast, and in the industrial Northeast of Ohio, and a lot of, conservative rural Republican areas.
Mm-hmm. And Calder, that's exactly right. And that's why we like moderate candidates, a Ted Strickland for governor, who with his social liberalism can sweep the urban areas, but because he's an NRA member, an NRA endorsed, and because he supports the death penalties and other things, he can do well in all the rural areas. As well.
And he also comes from that area. He comes from Appalachia. He comes from the rural areas. So in the areas where you think that would be more receptive to Republican candidates, Ted Strickland spoke their language because he came from that geographic area.
Surely. Actually, from Duck Run, Ohio, I believe. Yeah.
Okay. That'll be next week's trivia question. Brad, thanks very much for the phone call. I think, let's see if we go next to, this is Jennifer, and Jennifer's calling us from Hocking Hills in Ohio. And
Hocking Hills, okay.
Forgive me, Jennifer, where is that exactly?
It's in southeastern Ohio. It's on the map. We have all these caves and stuff. I graduated summa cum laude from OU. I voted for Obama, but I'm really displeased because he broke all his promises. And I was at the Nelson Music and Art Festival this weekend, and a young guy came and said, "Are you going to vote for Ron Paul? He'll probably be running in 2012. And I went, "I might," because I wasn't going to vote anymore. When he broke all the promises and the state we're in, granted, it wasn't his fault, the state we're in, but I don't know.
Which promises do you think he's broken?
Well, in closing Guantanamo Bay, in charging people that did all the torture things, and not showing the pictures. I mean, I was irate, you know. Everybody knows, you know, and so many people said, "Oh, I never saw those." Well, I used to have a computer. Hell, I put up, pulled up all those horrible photos of what this country, and it's not me, were doing to detainees.
Well, Ken, the president is, in fact, doing his best to close Guantanamo Bay by the end of the year. In fact, it's the Democratic Senate at this moment that's holding that up.
Well, only because the Republican members of the Senate, the few of them that are left, basically embarrassed the Democrats and President Obama by saying, "Well, look, we're not gonna want these terrorists to come to U.S. prisons. If you're going to close down Guantanamo prison, Mr. President, let's have a plan what to do with these, you know, 200, 300 some odd terrorism detainees who were there." And Democrats are afraid of that. The Democrats, Harry Reid got up yesterday and said, "Look, I don't want these terrorists running around in the United States," which, of course, there are a lot of people in prisons that you don't want running around your neighborhood anyway. But Democrats were really on the defensive over this, and they stripped the $80 million out of the budget for Guantanamo until President Obama decides what to do with these detainees.
And Fred,
some of the Democrats did too.
Some of the Democrats did too. Of course, they would have to since they control the majority of the votes in the Senate. Fred Anderle, let me ask you: there has been some criticism of the president nationally from the left on exactly some of these issues that Jennifer's talking about. Are you seeing that here in Ohio?
Oh, we're seeing criticism from the left, of course, criticism from the right. But still, the Obama approval rating, latest Quinnipiac University poll, 62% to 31% disfavoring him. I think one thing you're going to see in terms of Barack Obama and for looking ahead to his reelection campaign is that, according to Chris Redfern, the chair of the Ohio Democratic Party, Obama's strength in Ohio was that he established an office in each of the 88 counties staffed by people who were known locally, who knew the local problems. That's one thing that John Kerry did not do 4 years before, and one reason Chris Redfern says that he lost. So there's going to be some disaffection. There's no question about that. But if Obama is as good and as expert in his campaign as he was last time, he may be able to stem some of that disaffection. A lot of stimulus money coming to Ohio, by the way, up to $8 billion.
And that should be flowing in more forcefully soon. Jennifer, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go next to, this is Melissa. Melissa with us from Columbus.
Hi, how are you? First of all, I want to say, Fred Anderle, I'm so going to miss you. I'm sorry you're retiring. But I did want to just give one example. And you know, you were talking about Governor Strickland, and I think he's doing a great job. And one great example of that is how he brought NetJets to Columbus, Ohio, and had them expand their services. And certainly in times like today, we really need jobs. So especially in Ohio, as you all know, that we're losing jobs as well.
And I'm going to embarrass Fred Anderle, too. In fact, the reason we are here is to participate in a broadcast this evening with Fred Anderle in Columbus to celebrate his more than 20 years as the host of Open Line, a job he leaves at the end of this month. So we'll be saying nice things about Fred Anderle later in the day. But in the meantime, we're going to ask him to respond to what Melissa had to say.
Well, I think there's a real difficulty for Governor Strickland and for Republicans as well as Democrats in the legislature. We've lost so many jobs, 269,000 in the last 15 months. So the question is, how do you bring jobs here? And Governor Strickland says, well, you know, we'll do this by education. He's got a very progressive education plan, in the opinion of some, one which Republicans say we don't know how we're going to fund, more aid to education and to schools in all the 88 counties. But that's for the long term. In the near term, I think Republicans and Democrats in the state are saying, we don't know how we're going to bring many new jobs here. We're a Rust Belt state. The manufacturing jobs are gone. They're overseas. We talk about green energy jobs. Well, we do have one of the largest producers of solar panels up in the northern part of the state. We produce parts for wind turbines as well. But when you look at green jobs and high tech, we've got lots of competition from California, from the East Coast. Everybody wants those jobs. So I think the dilemma with a $3 billion budget hole in the next biennium facing both Republicans and Democrats in the state, the dilemma is how do we get new jobs into the state? And there's no clear answer.
Melissa, thanks very much for the call and for the nice words about Fred Angeli.
No, thank you. Thank you both. Great show.
Thanks, Melissa.
We're talking about Republican politics and Democratic politics in the state of Ohio with Fred Angeli of WOSU and, of course, political junkie Ken Rudin with us from Washington. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And let's go to Lucy. Lucy with us from Seven Hills in Ohio.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Yeah, so the thing I wanted to really say more than anything is that it's not really a Republican or Democrat thing. I think that's been beaten to death, this Republican versus Democrat everywhere, not just in Ohio. But there's been so much corruption here with our county, with our county commissioner, as well as our sheriff that was forced to resign last month and replaced with a new sheriff. And just it all started basically on a statewide level with the Tom No coin scandal a few years ago, about 4 years ago, that broke. And I'll just add one more thing. I really do think that Ohio is probably one of the most corrupt. And I wanted to ask you, just could you clarify, did you say that 269,000 jobs were lost here in the past 15 months? Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And what isn't it nationwide? Isn't that about half of all the jobs nationwide?
Oh, I'm afraid not. I think it's a much smaller fraction than that.
Okay. Well, thank you for taking my call. I'll hang up and I'll just listen to the rest of the show. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much for the call, Lucy. And let me ask Ken Rudin, the coin scandal, the other things that she was referring to, yes, those affected the party, not just in Ohio, but and politics, not just in Ohio, but around the rest of the state, around the rest of the state and around the country. I just want to read an email we got from Mike in Cleveland Heights, for example, who writes, I would not be surprised with the local Cleveland politicians in trouble with the FBI if the Republicans take over this city. Unfortunately, Cleveland Democrats have not done much except grease each other's palms, and that's his opinion. But nevertheless, corruption endemic in politics, Ken?
Well, it is, and of course, certain states have it more than the others. But I'm mostly interested in what Lucy said about it's, we shouldn't be blaming Democrats or Republicans. But my question to Fred, though, is that if the state has lost all these jobs, hundreds of thousands of jobs, and given the fact that Ted Strickland was elected in 2006, when does this become Ted Strickland's economy? When does it become Ted Strickland's problem? I mean, you know, we could blame Bob Taft and we could blame the Republicans all we want, but given that so many Republicans were ousted in Ohio in 2006 and Democrats took their place, when are the Democrats going to be held accountable for this?
That is the $64,000 question, Ken, because right now I think Ohioans are saying, look, there's a national fiscal crisis. All the economy in all the states is in shambles. So they seem to be giving Ted Strickland a pass with a 57% approval rating. Now, that's down from the 60s initially, but of course there's always a honeymoon period for a new governor. At some point, Ohioans are going to say, why doesn't Governor Strickland turn around Ohio the way he's supposed to be doing? There's some proposals for gambling, as you know, for 16,000 slot machines at Ohio's seven racetracks, for four casinos around the state, which the governor opposes, all of them. But the governor at a certain point is going to have to produce, and only the voters know when they're going to decide that this is Ted Strickland's problem.
Let's see if we can squeeze in one more call. And this is Jennifer. Jennifer with us from Cleveland.
Hi.
Just a few seconds, Jennifer.
Okay. I just wanted to tell you up here in Cleveland, it's always been very Democratic. I'm hearing a lot of buzz about how wonderful Jennifer Bruner is and how she beat back all the Republican challenges in the last presidential election. She's declared for U.S. Senate, but the Democrats are also running Lee Fisher. And I'm just wondering if Jennifer Bruner is going to be able to get the support from the Democratic Party that she needs to fill George Voinovich's slot, or are they going to go with sort of the old boy Lee Fisher, who's been in politics around here much longer?
Fred, handicap this for us.
Very quickly, Democrats seem to be split on the issue. Democrats in power seem to be split on that issue. There are a lot of supporters of both of them. Lee Fisher has more money in his campaign war chest right now, but Jennifer Bruner, the Secretary of State, is catching up, and they're going to battle it out in a primary, and the party is not officially supporting either one of them.
And is it absolutely clear who the Republican nominee is going to be?
It is absolutely clear. It seems to be Rob Portman for that Senator Voinovich's seat.
Jennifer, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And Fred Anderle, thank you so much for being with us today.
Neil, thank you. Ken, thank
Fred
you
Anderle,
well.
The host of Open Line here on WOSU in Columbus, leaves that position at the end of this month after more than 20 years on the job. Stay with us. Ken Rudin up next, the GOP strategy for the president's Supreme Court nominee and the battle to follow. Richard Viguerie will join us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.